Eagle Curve Hockey Show Fantasy Hockey Special, starring Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, featuring Michael Remus, and Dave... Oh, I forgot his last name.
I think he prefers David.
Featuring David something. And Ezra Ginsberg as the Beaver. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show Fantasy Hockey Special begins right now.
Oh, Lord. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this afternoon at sportsradio1290.com. Good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is the Fantasy Preview Spectacular. We are with you right up until 4 p.m. this afternoon. We're doing fantasy hockey for the first 3 hours. 3 to 4, we're going to shift over to talking about the Winnipeg Jets. And then, of course, that leads seamlessly into the H&L doing their preview show, 4 to 6. 6 to 7, another preview. Then 7 o'clock puck drop live from Nashville. Pretty much, just take your radio dial. Rip it off of your radio right now. You don't need to change it. You don't need to find other stations. Stay here. We're with you for the next 10 hours, 12 hours, whatever it's going to be. This is your home for hockey in Winnipeg, Sports Radio 1290. Good afternoon, Richard and Beaver, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say? Rack is awesome, and that intro was unbelievable, so thanks Rack, for that. That was hilarious. But, you know, I want to say something before we get into fantasy.
Is this about the booster?
No. Okay. It's not about the booster juice. Even though, for everyone listening out there, Richard and Drew got booster juice before the show and didn't call me to ask me if I wanted one, even though I gave Richard a 2-for-1 booster juice coupon so that me and him could go get booster juice. But not only did he not invite me, he didn't even use the coupon and got Drew to use his own coupon. So, no, but I want to tell you something. So right now, Remus and Dave are at the MTS Iceplex. The Jets, I believe, are just getting off the ice, or they might still
they're
be on the ice.
Off the ice now.
But,
yeah.
You know, we've been going to, we went to the exhibition game last Tuesday, and we've been going to as many practices as we can. You know, we have a media pass, we have a media guide, we have all this information, but today we drove down to the MTS Center and walked through security, and then we noticed that the MTS Center staff is setting up for a Bachman-Turner Overdrive concert. None of us decided to consult anyone about where the practice was, so... you know, the media is not glamorous, and none of us are obviously thinking clearly because we missed the Jets practice today, and I just thought I'd mention that, so it's pretty funny.
There was no ice.
No ice.
Dry land training. You guys specialized in dry land training, didn't you?
Yeah, there was ice in the booster juice that Drew purchased, but didn't buy you one.
Well, I know where they don't specialize in dry land training, Philadelphia. How funny.
That was okay.
That was good.
Wet Island or whatever it was called.
Dry Island. Yeah. No, that was okay. I'll give you that one.
Wet Island.
Pretty silent there for a second, guys. Like, I realize that, you know, 98% of the time I'm not funny, but that was... I thought for a second there you guys had left the building.
I'll tell you what. You made me laugh earlier this morning when you ordered your Salvadori Dali omelet at breakfast. I thought that was a good line as well. So you're doing okay. Keep it up. Richie, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, Drew.
Yeah?
I'm very much looking forward to the show, the fantasy preview show. I mean, hockey pools are a tradition that we all have partaken in for a fair amount of time now, and so it's the same guys, same groups that we always go in, and it's great to break it down.
Exactly, and that's what we're going to do. So let's start, you know, pretty much the next 3 hours, just all fantasy hockey. We have you covered. We've got some great guests coming up. Timo Seppä is going to be joining us.
Timo Solani.
Yeah, Timo Seppä is going to be joining us. He's from Puck Prospectus.
Timo Seppä is the Timo Solani of hockey, fantasy hockey.
Yeah.
Though.
Hockey, right. Hockey Prospectus now.
Pardon me. Hockey Prospectus. Timo Seppä is going to join us. We're going to talk sleeper forwards, the guys who might be a little bit under the radar. We'll talk about that with Timo coming up at 12:45 this afternoon.
12:30,
sorry.
Yes.
Then Jeff Angus from Dauber Hockey, going to talk sleeper defensemen.
Yep.
So, you know, we got you covered on the forwards. We got you covered on the defensemen. Busts. Who should you avoid? That's why we have Gus Katsaros coming on from McKean's Hockey. You know, he's going to tell you, whoa, caution on this guy, red flags everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk to him later on in the show. And then all about the goaltenders, Justin Goldman of the Goalie Guild. If you've never read Justin's stuff, I encourage you to do so. Nobody covers the art of goaltending quite like Justin does. He's going to talk about goaltenders with us towards the end of the fantasy hockey preview. So pretty much let's get started with talking about, you know, you're going into, you decide you want to start a draft with your buddies. You've never really done it before. Let's talk about the different options available out there. There's a lot of different, you know, everyone knows about the sort of the straightforward points pool. You know, every goal is worth 1 point. Every assist is worth 1 point. What are some of the other options out there?
Well, you know, all three of us here, and you know, when Dave and Remus get here, also
he prefers David.
David,
yeah.
We've done pools for a very, very long time, and usually we do a straight points pool, straight draft points pool, where you basically pick names out of a hat, and you draft players for goals and assists. So the most simplistic type of hockey draft you can go out there. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are listening now out there that do those types of pools where you just draft forwards, defensemen, goaltenders, and you might get a little bit creative with giving extra points for, you know, power play goals or penalty minutes, but you're really basically just ranking teams based on how many points they accumulate, and that's a pure points draft. And I guess the other popular draft that's in existence is Roto, which is more similar to what you would do in fantasy baseball or fantasy football,
right,
when you have teams that go head-to-head and their standings, and then you start to use more stats. I would say that, you know, maybe 70%, 80% of hockey drafts, because I've been in a lot of hockey drafts, don't usually involve the elaborate stats that you'll see in football or baseball.
No.
I'm not saying that they won't be Roto, but usually you'll have goals, assists for forwards and defensemen, maybe power play goals and plus minus, like I mentioned before, and then goalies, you'll have wins and shutouts. But Roto, usually you'll add stats because of the fact that it's a head-on-head format.
There's two different ways to do it. You can do a Roto based on a head-to-head where each week, you know, you gather points based on your performance or your player's performance, and you compete against Richard. So conceivably, you know, 1 week you could have the second worst week out of anybody in the pool, but because you're playing against the guy who had the worst week, you get a win in the win category.
You can go win, or you can go how many categories you win. So you go 6-3-1 because you beat the guy in six categories, tied him in one, and lost three. So your record 6-3-1 at the end of the year, you have a total record of 45. Like, for example, you could do, you know, when I was in one with Mike Colligan, who does great work at the Hockey Writers, and Forbes, great writer, we've had him on the show before, and he's invited me into a pool, which I often forget to put my lineup in, but
So you're the worst kind of guy to have in a pool,
then.
In a Roto pool, Richie, you have to follow it almost on a daily basis.
And so goals is one, assists is one, you have plus minus, you have power play goals, you have game-winning goals. That's like some forward categories, okay?
Right.
And then you have goaltending categories, save percentage, goals against, shutouts, wins. So that's, you know, that's nine categories right there. I forget what the 10th is. And that's how it works generally. So you'll play somebody in all those categories for the week. And there's a minimum amount of goalie games you have to play, so you can't just get zero. If you get one, you know, shutout, you get zero. Goals against, zero. Similar to minimum pitching innings.
Right.
There's a
threshold. You can't skew your lineup. You have to reach a minimal threshold in order to qualify in these categories. Like a guy, you know, in baseball who might bat 700, but he doesn't get the batting title because he only has 40 at bats.
Exactly. And guys, we should also point out that there are, you know, pros and cons to each. Whereas in football, you don't see the kind of straight points because it just doesn't work like that. Hockey is different. You got goals and assists. In baseball, it's not like that either. But I think the pro, though, in Roto with hockey is everyone who's been in a hockey pool knows that it's very, usual or probable that you're going to be out of the hockey pool very quickly if you have a couple guys that are injured. So Roto allows you to pick up guys off of the waiver wire, whereas a straight points pool, it's tough to do that.
Well, it's not necessarily true. I mean, you can have a straight points pool where you have, you know, you draft players and it's whoever gets the most points. You have some goalie stats in there as well. You start, you know, 10 forwards, 4 defensemen. You have a bench of 5. You can do trades. You can do pickups. You can do a bunch of other things.
Right.
Some people like it that the whole draft is what matters. And you know, I'm in a pool where you draft 30 players. You just let it ride.
Yep.
That's right. You're done. You don't have, after that first game, you don't have to monitor it if you don't want to. At the end of the year, you could end up winning, but you haven't done anything since that one day in September
and
or October.
And it's not, so you draft 30 players. Like the rule, the one that I'm in that I quite enjoy is you draft 30 players. Of the first 17, 4 have to be defensemen, 1 has to be a rookie, and the other 12 are you know, generally forwards, obviously. They have to be forwards.
They don't have to be forwards, necessarily.
No, sorry.
But you generally wouldn't draft more defensemen than forwards.
That's right.
Your point's taken.
And you can take 2 rookies if you want. You have to designate. You know, you can't take a defenseman and a rookie and designate it as both, kind of thing. And then the rest, the 13 rest, is generally, you know, you can take one defenseman in the...
But here's why I don't like that pool, because I've been in that pool in the past.
Yeah.
That pool rewards 2 points for every goal.
And that's why it's unique, though.
A lot of pools do that. A lot of pools put extra weight on a guy who scores goals.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't like that. I like, if you're going to do a points pool, a point for a goal, a point for an assist, boom, you're done.
You're a purist.
Yes, I would be a purist.
There's two assists every goal. Generally, not every goal, but...
Yeah, lots of goals generally have that secondary assist. I don't know. It just, to me, it rewards, you know, goal scoring. It skews goals, the goal scoring.
But you know that before you go in.
Of course you know that. I mean, I'm not saying that you're blind. It's just something that I prefer.
We used to be in a football pool, in your pool, that didn't give a point for every 10 yards, give a point for every 20 yards, and there was a touchdown with six. So you get a 100-yard rusher, we get less points than a guy who got one touchdown and 7 yards.
Right, it was a very touchdown-heavy league.
You knew the rules going in.
That's right, of course. I mean, there's no disagreement, no argument from my point about knowing the rules. It's just not something that I prefer. Let me ask you guys this question. We've all done a variety of drafts.
Yep.
What do you like best? What is your favorite kind of fantasy hockey draft?
I'll go first. I mean, I like, you know, we've been doing an illegal curve pool for probably 15 years, and we do a very simplistic draft format. Usually draft 10 or 12 players. Depending on how many teams there are, obviously, if there's more teams, you probably want to take a few less players. But usually, we just draft, 12 players, and with two drops and goals and assists count, no goalies. I like that.
That's
but on the other
a very traditional pool.
Very traditional pool, Drew. But I've also been in pools. We've done a 4-year pool, and we've done it that includes salary cap and all that. So I mean,
that pool almost ruined our lives.
I've been in pools. When I was a little bit younger. That took into consideration penalty minutes and stuff like that. And that's fine. If you're the type of person that likes to check hockey stats on a nightly, if not hourly basis, and come up with formulas and you're a stats person, I would go in a draft that is like that. But if you're the type of person that just wants to, watch hockey, have some fun, follow the goals, follow the assists, and not get too into the minutiae, really, because there's some really good hockey stats out there, but when you're starting to draft guys for penalty minutes and goals, it's usually called the enforcer pick or whatever, but it can get a little bit intense because there aren't that many guys that'll give you more than 30 points and 100 penalty minutes. There's only a select few guys for stats like that.
Maybe I'm too traditional. I don't like those pools necessarily, those roto pools, where you have points for goals, game-winning goals, because who the heck knows when you're going to score, who's going to score game-winning goals. It's all luck. Plus, minus, highly dependent on who you're playing. I realize you're picking players based on knowing where they're going to be playing, etc., but, a good player on a bad team, it's just, I don't think it's necessarily the best players. You're not picking the best players, the best point producers, which... There's a lot of things I don't love about it. I always just hate that the goaltending is worth so much in those pools,
right?
As opposed to forward. They have four categories for a goalie, and then there's six for forwards and defensemen, but it's 5-1 in terms of a starting lineup. So, I don't love them, but I can understand why people do. Especially, more of our American listeners. That's traditional. Yep. The rotisserie is more traditional for them.
Because of baseball, football,
exactly.
Basketball.
Right, especially baseball.
Yep.
Let's leave it there. When we come back in the next segment, we're going to talk about the top 10 forwards, who you should draft in that first round, and the big outstanding question, where would you draft Sidney Crosby? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Fantasy Preview Spectacular, live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. My name is Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Throughout the show today, courtesy of our good friends at Hockey Prospectus, we're going to be giving away a few of their Hockey Prospectus annuals. Richie, is that what it's officially called, the Hockey Prospectus annual? Richard Pollock, one of the contributors to that fine magazine. So stay tuned throughout the show. We'll be doing some fun little trivia as we make our way through these next 4 hours here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, you have the first overall pick in the imaginary draft that I'm conducting. Who are you taking?
Drew, always, you could say, in theory, always a difficult question. It really isn't. For the past few years, it's been Crosby or Ovechkin. This year, we'll talk about Crosby in a second. You can't take Sidney Crosby number one. You just can't. There's far too much risk there. And do I think he's the best player in the world? Yes, absolutely. At least the player he was last year prior to the concussion. I think the question really is between four guys. I'd say it's between Steven Stamkos, Alexander Ovechkin, Corey Perry, and Daniel Sedin.
I should point out at this point, when I ask you that question, I'm assuming you're in a pool that rewards 1 point for a goal, 1 point for an assist.
Not necessarily true. I mean, well, later on when we can clarify that more, Drew, the best players in any pool go top because they do so many things. I think this isn't any pool we're talking about, first overall pick. I mean, some pools are have certain points systems that are just, they go off the board with goalies and all that stuff. But in the general pool, these four guys are going to be, the guys who are considered for number one. If I had the first pick, I would probably take Steven Stamkos.
You go Stamkos first overall.
But it'd be difficult.
Okay. Ezzy, same question to you.
I think I don't have a problem with Richie's pick, but I think you have to assume that his assist totals are going to go up next year. Last year, he had 46 assists, 45 goals for 91 points. If you think he's going to get into the high 90s, you have to assume that he's going to get more assists. And you know what? I don't necessarily think he's going to get less assists this year, but I think you're expecting the surge of, 10 assists or something. I think it's going to be close. I don't think it's quite going to be between four guys. I would shorten that list to two guys, and I think it's between Ovechkin and Stamkos. I think Daniel Sedin's numbers have been good the last year. He led the league last year, and the year before that, he was injured, and that was the year Henrik Sedin won the scoring title. But I think it's between Ovechkin and Stamkos, and I'm going to give it to Ovechkin for the simple fact that he had a kind of a down year for him. I mean, and I think his goals will be up. I don't necessarily know if they're going to be close to the 65 goals that he had a few years back. But I think it's Ovechkin, and I think his numbers will be higher. But I'm last year, if you guys remember, if everyone remembers, Crosby was on pace for 140 points.
Yeah, he's going to be amazing. Yeah.
Stamkos was on pace for 65, 70 goals and 130 points, and then scoring just really tightened up. No one really expected Stamkos to score 70 goals, but a lot of people expected him to maybe hit 60. But I think it's Ovechkin, because I think his goal totals will be up to the levels they were before, but I definitely don't think that he's going to blow Stamkos out by more than 10 points.
When you factor in age too, Drew, I mean, I include Daniel Sedin, Daniel Henrik, if you want to include both. They're pretty similar in terms of their point totals. If it's between, Steven Stamkos, 21 years old, Ovechkin, 26, Perry, 26, and then Sedin's 31, you probably want to stay away from the 31-year-old when you have such good options at those young ages.
So you're factoring in you just think the 31-year-old's closer to being on the, which logically makes sense, that he's closer to being on the downside than he is to continue his numbers going up, whereas Stamkos, you figure, is only the sky's the limit.
Sky is the limit with him. I mean, look at his consistency in terms of scoring goals. And goals are the hardest things to come by. You can find, if you're in one of those other pools, you can find penalty minutes. If you're in a pool that rewards goals more, than obviously he has prime, but he scores at such a rate that's so difficult to find. Henrik Sedin's not going to give you those goals. Perry very well could. Ovechkin, because that's why we're talking about these guys.
I mean, Perry got you 50 goals last year, the only guy in the league to get you 50 goals.
And Stamkos has passed two seasons, 51 goals and 45 goals.
And he
missed three games also, we should talk about that, guys.
Yep. Durability.
Three games over 3 years is what he's missed. Ovechkin, is generally durable. Has had some suspension stuff in the past.
Yep. Yeah, he missed three games last year.
Sedin's have been injured. Daniel's been injured 2 years ago. He was injured. So those things need to be taken into account as well.
Last year Stamkos, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head. It had to have been between 15 and 20 games that he didn't score a goal.
Last
year, he was on pace in the closer to the end of the first half. It was around there. We'll check that.
To be expected that he would come back to earth.
When you score 45 goals and you go through a drought like that, playing an entire season, that shows you how explosive a goal scorer he is. He's very young, but I think it's not a coincidence that those three guys are the best goal scorers in the league. And obviously, we're not factoring in Crosby, who I think we're going to get to very shortly. But
we're about to get to him. So
you have to consider, though, Drew, that I'm not talking Stamkos here. I'm talking Ovechkin and Daniel Sedin, who a lot of people out there, when they go into hockey pools, when they get the first pick, they're going to think, okay, Daniel Sedin or Ovechkin. And you have to factor in that last year was Daniel Sedin's best year ever by far, even though the year before he was on pace for, I believe, 105 points or whatever. But you have to factor in, is there going to be, and I know some people don't buy into this, but he's played a lot of hockey. Are his numbers going to be good? Is Vancouver going to be as good?
That's a good point, too.
And I think Ovechkin's numbers were worse than his average. So I would say
Ovechkin, 85 points last year. The seasons before, he had an average of 110.5.
Right. It's a huge drop.
His goals went down by 18 goals from 1 year to the next. His assist total actually stayed about the same.
Yeah, he's probably going to get the same similar amount of goals and assists, maybe a few more assists. But Ovechkin's numbers should go up, and most people are predicting, like the McKean's guide that we have here. We're going to have Gus on soon. The McKean's guide predicts Ovechkin for 109, and usually that's where he's at based on his first, his seventh year in the league.
Vekoda, which is a projection system for hockey perspective.
So let's just say that. You're going to hear the word Vekoda a lot today on this program. The word Vekoda is an acronym, right?
After Mick Vekoda, the fighter.
Okay.
Yeah. Played for the Islanders.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's the system used by Hockey Prospectus in projecting what a player is going to get the next season.
Now, it's a little bit more
stats-based. It's a little more in-depth, right?
It's more statistically based on comparables of players, of similar players. It's also a little more conservative. They have projected Alexander Ovechkin to get 98 points next year.
So Vekoda is just a projection method. So there you go. So everyone knows what we're talking about right there.
Now, one thing you have to understand with a guy like Alexander Ovechkin, he scored 32 goals last year, okay?
Yeah.
His shot total was actually one shot off of the season prior. Now, of course, he played more games last year than the season prior, but his shot total has dropped the past 3 years. Which is a little bit disconcerting, but his percentage last year was also down. So generally guys who have shooting percentages, you know, his shooting percentage over the course of his career has been 12%. Last year was, you know, below 9. If he gets back to his career average and 3% more of those goals go in, well, then you're looking at more, you know, a higher goal total and a little more luck on his side. So that's one of the things you can look at for a bounce back year. One other thing you have to bring up is the fact that he doesn't play as much as he used to. When Ovechkin was scoring 65 and 56 goals a year in 2007-08 and 2008-09, he was playing upwards of 23 minutes a game.
Because Bruce Boudreau changed the strategy of the team midway through last season,
and
really.
They have more depth than they used to.
Yep. Let's spend the next 5 minutes talking about this question. It's the question everybody in drafts have. Where do you take Sidney Crosby? Ezzy, I'll start with you.
I'm going to be completely honest. I have no idea, and your guess is as good as mine. I'm not going to tell people,
you're in a fantasy draft, and Sidney Crosby is sitting there. At what round do you jump on?
What I'm saying, Drew, is that it's a good question because right now there is no definitive return date. And
Ezra Ginsberg's answer.
I would say that you'd have to go into a draft thinking he's going to play half a season. That's what I would do. So I would not take him in the first or second round. But if he plays half a season, he could get 70 points.
I think the end of the fourth round is where you likely should be taking Sidney
Crosby. Makes sense. Let's say you're in a 10, you're taking 10 players around, and there's going to be, let's say, 100 players, 150 players. That I would agree with that.
You're looking at around, you know, the end of the fourth round, beginning of the fifth round, where you probably think, hey, there's some other guy. You know, we're out of the top tier now, right? You know, like for example, about the 50 level. In Hockey Prospectus's projections, have guys, you know, 54 is David Backes. Well, if I take Crosby here, he's so much better than David Backes. If he does continue to be out, I can find somebody more similar to David Backes later on. But the upside is so great with Crosby that, and I know what I'm getting out of that slot generally, that I can probably fill it later on. That's where I go, fourth or fifth round. But anywhere before that, I mean, are you going to pass up a guy like Rick Nash to take a chance on Sidney Crosby? He may not play till December. Watch, like, David Booth is a guy I've always liked, and I think he's a great player. Last year, he came back from that vicious concussion he had from Mike Richards. He was not the same player. Do I think he can return and be very good? Sure. But you never know with concussions, and that's the risk. Even if he plays, which we don't know. We don't know if he will play. But if he plays, will he play with the same level of confidence, with the same willingness to go into dirty places? Nobody knows.
And you'd have to say, though, that if there is one player that will come back after missing the first 40 games of the season and actually put up good numbers as soon as he comes back, it would be Sidney Crosby. Remember when Mario Lemieux came back and everyone said, oh, you know, there's absolutely no way he'll be good. He's been off for so long. There's certain players that are like that. But I agree. You have to, you know, factor in that there's maybe 35 to 40 players in the NHL every year that get 70 points, roughly. And that's not an exact number.
Right, you're right.
So that's why fourth round, fifth round makes sense, because you could get 70 points in half a season.
What you're saying is there's certain guys, there's certain in the 70-60 range, you know you're going to get. This is the thing, guys. There's going to be a lot of people who take Alexander Ovechkin number one, okay? And it goes, it's a snake draft, for example. It goes the back to 10. And comes back to the guy with number, with, so, you know, the
1 20th, to 10, 10 to 1.
The 20th pick in the draft. He has Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby's there. And he thinks, oh my God, I could put Alexander Ovechkin with Sidney Crosby. A lot of people, a lot of people are going to be picking based upon the ability to combine two of the best players that you would never be able to combine if he wasn't injured.
I hope we talk about that later, because it's not like the playoff pool.
Would you fault a guy for doing that? I'm saying that I wouldn't do that, because what you're doing is falling in love with the idea of what that could be and not practically picking. Because at the same time, you could very well take Bobby Ryan there.
Richie, in playoff pools, when you have the chance that your players are going to be eliminated after each round.
Obviously.
But that's the thing. I agree with Richard. You have to focus on, it's almost like the draft, Drew. How much leading up to the draft did we talk about draft the best player available? Don't think about this or that. Just take the best player there. Don't pick for centers or goaltenders. You know, you have to not think that that's actually going to give you an advantage.
Right.
Having two guys on the same line. Yeah, every night you get to, some people like to, you know, check the box scores and have all of their players on one team, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Make sure they're good players, though.
Right.
It's a fair point. Let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk sleeper forwards with Timo Seppä of Hockey Prospectus. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Fantasy Hockey Preview Spectacular, live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Foo Fighters.
Fantasy Hockey Preview Spectacular.
You like the Foos?
I do like the Foo Fighters.
Foos are awesome.
Yeah, I'm a big Foo Fighter
guy. Friends that
Foo's
went down.
He's actually a food fighter. He was pretty successful this morning at breakfast.
I did try and steal. This coming from the guy who always steals food off my plate. So, you know, the pot calling the kettle black.
This is a great booster juice. Oh, wait.
Yeah, you don't have one.
I'd say that we were actually driving down Pembina. We're driving to the studio, and Drew's in the passenger seat. He goes, oh, booster juice, two for one. And he made me pull a U-turn.
I didn't make you do anything. You voluntarily did it and said, go buy me a booster juice.
It was kind of like, and there's a rap music outside and all these women inside. And
booster juice it's a meal. It's a meal in a styrofoam cup.
Here's the latest breaking news. Apparently, as Dave Manuka of IllegalCurve.com fame was walking out of the MTS Iceplex about 5 minutes ago, some kid asked him for his autograph. That's really depressing. That Dave could be mistaken for an NHL player?
With Dave,
really depressing.
With Dave Manuk's coverage on IllegalCurve.com of the morning papers and dating back to the Drama in the Desert and Drama in Dixie covering the Atlanta Thrashers and Phoenix Coyotes, you know, he should be getting autograph requests. He should be signing autographs. Dave Manuk is the Hunter S. Thompson of hockey bloggers. He's a celebrity. We just know him, so we don't know about that. But he's got a little bit of a following. And I wouldn't be surprised if they make a movie about him one day.
We're working on getting Timo Seppä on the line. He's from Hockey Prospectus.
Fear and Loathing in St. James.
Fear and Loathing of food in Dave's case. Anyways, Timo Seppä from Hockey Prospectus is coming right up in a moment or two to talk fantasy hockey sleeper forwards. These are the guys you want to jot down their names. And when you're in the 7th, 8th rounds of your draft and people are looking into the dregs, that's when you want to check that guy off and win your pool deep in those rounds.
And not always the dregs. It could be a guy who's, you know, some slot is a 6th-round pick, and you make a 3rd-round pick.
Exactly. And if you get great value for him, there's no such thing as buying too low if you're getting great value.
And one thing about a snake draft is that, you know, say you're picking in the middle of the 4th round,
mm-hmm.
and you know if you let a guy go by, he's not going to last the next 10 picks. You might have to reach, quote-unquote, for a guy, as opposed to in an auction draft, of which there are some hockey pool auction drafts. You have the right to bid on every single player, provided you have the amount of money necessary to bid on him.
Exactly right. Let's go to the Timo Seppä on the line.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Timo Seppä from Hockey Prospectus, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, how are you doing, guys?
Good, Timo. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine today. Nice quiet day here in Connecticut. Heading off to see the Islanders and Devils tonight.
Are they playing in Hartford?
No, they're playing down in Long Island.
Oh, okay. You're road tripping. That's attaboy. That's a good hockey fan.
It's always a road trip for me to any of the New York area teams.
Exactly. Timo, we got a list of players we're going to go through. We'll try and get through as many of them as we can start. We were just speaking about them last segment. Let's start with your take on Sidney Crosby.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what kind of a league you're in. You know, for years I was used to playing in leagues where you set your lineup weekly. And in those leagues, you tend to have a bunch of players on your bench or reserves that just kind of sit there throughout the year. And in those kind of leagues, I think you're better off, rolling the dice on guys that are injured or prospects where you're waiting to see if they're getting more playing time or whatever, somebody that you can stash on your bench. I think a lot of it makes a difference of if you need players to be producing for you every week, which tends to be the case in daily leagues. So I think that that does make a difference for guys with injury questions. For Crosby, he was doing just so well last year. It really is, it's a big conundrum. I mean, he was on a 64-goal pace, other than Ovechkin scoring 65 goals a couple years ago. I mean, that would have been the best goal tally since Mario Lemieux about 15 years ago. So, I mean, he really was having a historic season. So it's so tempting. On the other hand, you got a player who could be missing half a year. You got a player who could miss the whole year. You got a player who could come back for three games and be out for the whole year. You just don't know. It's just such a huge wild card that you're... wrapping all that together, I would roll the dice on him a couple rounds into the draft.
Let's talk about another young guy, Brad Marchand.
Sure. I think he, he obviously had a good season. He came into his own in the playoffs. He had a 20-game cup of coffee 2 years ago. He didn't do much. But last year he was looking like he was a player that was definitely top six worthy. And if you look at him last year, he only got 14 minutes of ice time. He got about a half a minute of power play time per game. You figure with guys like Recchi and Ryder leaving the Bruins, and you figure with the trouble that they had on the power play, that somebody like Marchand could end up with significantly more power play time. So not only are you looking for him to jump because it's basically his sophomore year, but also because he might get a lot more prime time playing time.
That's exactly right, Timo. And you mentioned him. Some people overlook that fact. When a guy doesn't get a lot of power play time, then the possibility is there that he could obviously, log maybe a minute more. That's a significant amount of time, and obviously the scoring chances are far superior when you get power play time. So there's a possibility of jumps that aren't so obvious.
Right, and that's just as far as regular goals, assists, and points. Obviously,
right.
Some leagues you have power play points as a category, so it's even more important in that kind of case.
Let's go with another young player, John Tavares.
Sure. I mean, I see a ton of the Islanders. I saw about a quarter of their games last year. Obviously, he took a decent step last year from a nice 54-point rookie season 2 years ago to 67 points last year. Vokoda, projection system has him pegged at 74 points this year. I might even take the over on that. You're looking for not only Tavares getting one more year of improvement, but you're looking at a team that really is growing around him. You're looking at Mark Streit coming back on the Islanders' power play. And probably the one thing, pretty much everybody could see all those things, but what I liked about Tavares is what I saw with my own eyes about him in the second half of last year. He was showing a lot more tools of a well-rounded goal scorer. You know, I've joked around about him being Mr. Garbage Goal for the first year and a half that he was in the league. He was doing a lot more than just hanging around the paint in the second half of last year. He was making moves, making guys miss, and creating his own shots. So he's a guy that looked like was putting it together in the second half of last year, and I would look for another solid step forward for him.
Yeah, Timo, I agree with you on John Tavares. I think that the return of Mark Streit is important, and I think that he showed a lot in the second half, even more so in the first half. As far as the forward lines that he's usually on with Pierre Parenteau and Matt Molson, is that just more of a sign that he can basically play with anybody? Because a lot of people were pointing that out last year, that he put up those numbers, and really he made Matt Molson, a guy who's really a career AHLer, look pretty good.
Well, Molson's had two very solid years in a row. I think he's been a 30-goal scorer for two years in a row. I wouldn't sleep on Matt Molson. I mean, he's a guy that I would pick in some leagues in the mid rounds definitely, and not have any kind of a problem. People were looking to have him take a step back last year, and that really wasn't the case at all. Now, Parento is definitely much more of a career AHLer, but, you know, he's been competent as a wingman for those two more skilled guys. Now, for the Islanders, you know, if they were ever able to pick up a better player, or if they shuffled their lineup, I mean, they've got a ton of forwards now, and who knows who ends up there, but... you know, if there's somebody who's going to be bumped off the first line, it's Parento, but look for Tavares and Molson to stick together.
Timo, what about, sticking with the Islanders for a second, you obviously see them quite extensively. Michael Grabner, you know, obviously surprised a lot of people last year. Vancouver had to be regretting that move because they could have used a second-line winger, got into the finals, and they ended up not using Keith Ballard at all. Do you think that he's for real?
I do think he's for real. It's a funny mix if you look at him last year. I mean, on one hand, you can look at some of his stats and you take a stats-based look at him and say, well, he's going to regress a little bit. Okay, I'll buy that. On the other hand, he was very much like Tavares in that if you looked at him the first half of last year, it was speed. Speed, speed, speed. That was his one tool.
Right.
And then he looked like he didn't know what to do to finish with the puck. He'd just basically drive it right into the goalie. That came together for him in the second half of last year. He really had a very diverse offensive game. He's obviously paired up on a line that, you know, with Franz Nielsen, who he did well with last year, yeah. And Oposo, fit in well when he came in for the second half of the year. So Grabner, you know, there's some reasons why you might see him taking a step back, saying it was luck. On the other hand, you know, I saw all the skills come together. So I do think he's for real. As far as his line mates, I mean, I'd look for Franz Nielsen to take a little bit of a step back. I mean, he kind of had an unreal year last year for who he is.
Good point on Grabner. It's actually very interesting that you say that because I had the opportunity to speak to somebody who played with Grabner a couple of years back, and his comment was, at the time, everybody just thought, you know, including his teammates, that his only move was speed, and that after he would burn the corner, he wouldn't know what to do with it. So it's interesting that that all came together. Drew?
It's almost like I'm a scout or something.
Mike Ribeiro in Dallas, what do you foresee happening with that?
Well, you know, that's one that I'm sure some other people are pointing towards as well. I mean, obviously Brad Richards is gone, so Mike Ribeiro is going to take a lot bigger role there. You figure he's going to get that many more minutes. He's going to get that much more power play ice time. I mean, he's not a huge goals guy, but he's a guy that can put up a healthy amount of assists and points, so... you know, I wouldn't reach for him, but if you see him drop because people aren't paying attention to the fact that his role is going to change a little bit, you know, he's somebody who might be a nice pickup in the middle rounds.
And, you know, Ribeiro obviously taking the step forward because of Brad Richards leaving and going to New York. Do you see that having a positive effect on Marian Gaborik?
Oh, absolutely. And Gaborik's a weird one. I mean, obviously, you go back, you know, a few years. I mean, the main thing everybody was thinking about with Gaborik was all of his health issues. He seemed to have that sorted out pretty well the last 2 years, so I wouldn't be worried about Gaborik's health. On the other hand, his percentages were down a bunch last year. He's a career... I believe 15% shooter, something in that ballpark, and last year he shot something like 11%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're looking for that to bounce back just to begin with, and then having Richards playing on his line, you know, you've got that perfect mix of a playmaker and a finisher. You know, you got to figure that that's going to work well on the first line. You got to figure that that's going to work well on the power play. So, whereas Richards had a very good year last year, you might even look for a half step back from Richards. I think the stars are aligning for a pretty good year for Marian Gaborik.
Timo, there's a lot of people in Winnipeg listening to the show, listening to the Fantasy Hockey Preview, and they're going to want to know about Evander Kane. You know, he's going to be on the second line on left wing. Last year it was his second year. This is going to be his third year in the league. Maybe what do you think that, you know, his ceiling is this year, and what do you think maybe about another guy that recently became Atlanta Thrasher, now Winnipeg Jet, Blake Wheeler?
Sure. And certainly would want Rich to chime in on this, because obviously Rich wrote the Winnipeg chapter in our book. Kane is obviously, I mean, he was a fourth overall pick in the draft. You know, last year he got took a step forward in his playing time. You know, he got 18 minutes of playing time and 2 minutes of power play time per game. That was good. You know, who knows, he could get even more power play time than that. He put up 43 points last year. Vakota is looking for a 54-point season for him. And he's a talented young player, so you figure that, who knows, he could exceed that projection as well. What do you think about him, Rich?
You know what, I think you nailed the team. I think there's even more upside possibly. A couple of things that I liked about him, you know, his first season, 13 of his 14 goals were at even strength. Then, you know, the next season, 15 of his 19 goals were at even strength. And one thing I love is that he put more than 100 shots on net last year than he did the year prior. So he's got a lot of upside, and I know the brass here certainly likes him. So there's a lot to like. I think Vakota's got him at about 26 goals and about 29 assists. I could see him, I think those are pretty accurate totals. He could exceed that a bit, but I think people here also need to, you know, temper their expectations because he's still in his third year.
Right. And as far as Blake Wheeler, I mean, he's a big guy, you know, played on Boston for a while, you know, had, you know, a great year with a plus minus 3 years ago, but then again, so did everybody on Boston that year. Right. You know, he's a guy that people have been waiting to break out a bit. And I think, you know, really the question with him and the Jets is time on ice again. You know, he's a guy who's never averaged more than 16 minutes per game. And it looked like when he was traded to Atlanta last year that he was getting more time on both even strength and the power play. And I guess it depends on how the coaching staff utilizes him there in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and Wheeler is a guy, I mean, Vakota has him at about 17 goals and about 42 points. Some people here keep asking, you know, 30, 35. I think that's a little bit high, but I think he certainly can exceed those totals. I know that he's going to get top line right wing minutes. The right wing isn't as strong for the Jets as the left wing, because the left wing, they have Ladd and Kane. The right wing, Fair, is their number two right winger. He's injured. So Wheeler's going to get all the time in the world, Timo. I think if this isn't his year, you have to evaluate what he really is after the season.
I agree with that.
Timo Seppä from Hockey Prospectus, tell our listeners where they can find you aside from on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm on Twitter, for instance, at just my name, Timo Seppä, T-I-M-O-S-E-P-P-A. That's probably the best place to find me. And, of course, I'm one of our dozen writers or so over at HockeyProspectus.com. And, obviously, buy the book, Hockey Prospectus 2011-2012. It's on Amazon, and we're hoping that it'll come on Amazon.ca very soon.
And Timo's been kind enough to give away a couple copies on this show of Hockey Prospectus. We're going to do some trivia, Timo, throughout the show and give a couple of those copies away. So thank you for that.
That sounds great, and definitely call in for those, because we've put out a really good product this year. We added about 25% more pages. I mean, we've got almost a 500-page tome here, and, you know, you won't find anything else like this that analyzes the teams and players to this level.
You really won't. And let me just say, Timo has done an incredible job editing this book. I mean, this is just, this, as he said, it's just 500 pages, and it's unbelievable.
Timo Seppä from Hockey Prospectus, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Timo. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to do more of our fantasy hockey preview. You're listening to Sports Radio 1290. Big thank you to Timo Seppä from Hockey Prospectus for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We will have more fabulous guests throughout this program as we take you through the entire world of fantasy hockey. Guys, let's talk about those sort of third and fourth round picks now. With the guys who, you know, you can almost make or break your draft with these guys, especially because if one of these guys, you know, takes the next step forward and hits, becomes an upper echelon player, you're getting a first round pick for fourth round value. which is, you know, obviously a huge addition. You know, flipping through the book here, you know, looking at some of the projections going forward, you got guys like Jeff Carter, Marian Gaborik named there, Martin Havlat, Jeff Skinner, Paul Stastny. Who amongst that sort of second tier of players is jumping out at you as the guy to grab?
Maybe I'm out to lunch on this one. I'm not so sure the Jeff Carter, Rick Nash experiment will work. I like Jeff Carter, but I don't love Jeff Carter. I really think that if you're looking at that second to third area, Claude Giroux, without Richards and Carter there now, he already was an impressive player. I think he is a really, really, really nice beginning of the third round pick. I think he has high upside. I think that he's going to have more opportunity. Now, remember, it's Briere and him are the top two centers now. There's no Carter. There's no Richards. There's no shifting to the wing for any of the guys that Richards was doing a fair amount of. Other guys were doing a fair amount of. These guys are the ones up the middle now, and I think that they're going to be very dangerous.
Yeah, and it's funny. If you call it the second tier, some people would say that that's the second round, but really, I mean, I would say that second tier is maybe getting back to what we were talking about before, guys that are high 60s, low 70s, but I'm going to throw out a guy that I think who's going to have maybe a better season than people think. Mike Richards on L.A., I think that he's going to benefit a lot from playing with basically an entire new team for him. I think Mike Richards is going to be good value, maybe not necessarily in the second round. Then again, that depends what your definition of second tier is. But Mike Richards is a guy, you know, he's not going to score 90 points, but if all goes according to plan, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets 85 points.
Well, that's, I mean, Ezzy, the thing about Richards is, and to that point, you know, I think that 85 is high, but I think in a pool as that rewards shorthanded goals, power play goals, and plus minus, all that
penalty stuff. Minutes, yeah.
Penalty minutes, he's going to be in all those categories. So in one of those pools, he might be higher.
In a rotisserie pool, he's got more value than a straight points pool.
He's got cachet.
He's got cachet, baby.
You guys just wanted to say the word cachet there, am I right?
Yep.
Basically.
Okay, just making sure. So those are the guys you sort of like there. What about the next step? Anybody that jumps out at you?
By the way, Tim, producer Tim just walked in with what looks like a banana on toast or something.
Everything bagel.
Nice, the everything bagel. Yeah, sorry, I got distracted.
Drew? In the same tier?
Next tier? You know, the Mike Camilleri, Stephen Weisses of the world.
Well, you know, I think that I'm, you know, looking at the list of...
Sorry, let me rephrase the question. At this point...
Let me ask you this. I think I got somebody here that... Mikko Koivu's finally going to have somebody who can shoot the puck on his wing.
Danny Heatley.
Mikko Koivu is one of the best passers in the NHL, one of the more underrated players in the National Hockey League. He's been playing for the majority of his career with guys like Andrew Burnett, all respect to him, solid player, and Antti Miettinen, a guy who, if he is shot from the blue line, might bounce the puck three times before it hits the net. Doesn't have a very good shot.
Okay. Really? Is that what that meant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Drew. You put a guy on his wing who can shoot the puck. You know, I'm not sure. Like, the combinations always switch a lot, but whether it be the Setoguchi, whether it be the Heatley, he's going to have somebody who can fire it. And he hasn't really had that before. And I've watched a lot of Mikko Koivu, and a lot of times he's the kind of player who gives, you know, 10 chances to a guy over a course of two games, and the guy scores twice, where he should score three or four times if he has really good hands. Mikko Koivu... They have a new staff there this year. It's a fresh start for everybody. I don't love the team as a whole, and their defense is going to miss Brent Burns. But from an offensive standpoint, he has people who can put the puck on the net. And I think, you know, projections here, Vakota have him at about 70 games, 22 goals, and about 40 assists. I think he can certainly exceed that assist projection.
That doesn't sound like much.
It's a cautious system. But at the same time, I think people always, you know, a lot of times if you were to sit down and do projections yourself, oh, this guy would do great. This guy would do great. Everybody's doing great. Somebody has to have a bad year. But I think he can certainly exceed that assist total. He's got the skill to do it, and he finally has some line mates, even if Danny Heatley doesn't skate.
He had 45 assists last year playing with nobody.
Well, the projection is 70 games, though, Drew. How many games did he play?
70 games. He played 71 games last year. He had 62 points.
So doesn't factor in these new line mates.
So. Well, I think those new line mates are significant. I would agree with you there.
So I think
that seems like a guy that you certainly could get, you could take in the, you know, third or fourth round, and you might be able to get, you know, value more commensurate with a round or two earlier.
Well, Drew, you're throwing out names and you're bunching guys together: Stephen Weiss, Mike Camilleri, and you're kind of You're watering down guys and grouping them into point ranges. Which
aren't my own projections.
I'm not saying there are. But you're just saying which guys should you take and avoid. And the thing is, you know, for a long time in hockey pools, I would try to look for guys that were going to have the breakout years, and sometimes it works. Mm-hmm. In 2005, 2006, we were at a hockey pool, and I took Brian Gionta and Jonathan Chichu. Chichu ended up getting really lucky by playing with Joe Thornton, scoring 56 goals. Gionta, I just liked, and he ended up doing way better than he should have and got 46 goals. So it works sometimes. But for all of those picks, there's always a guy that's not going to work out.
Good point.
And I think that the key in hockey pools, and I mean, this is important because, you know, I like to consider myself someone who knows to a certain degree what he's doing as far as hockey pools go. And you want to take guys that are, you want to be cautious. I think you definitely want to be cautious. Corey Stillman retired this year, and we've made fun of Drew on the show in previous shows about drafting guys like that. But you'd want to take a guy that's going to be a guaranteed 50 points over a guy that might score 30, but he might score 70. And the way I look at it,
very
Richie,
good point,
Stephen Weiss, if it's between Stephen Weiss and Michael Camilleri, even though both of them have had injury problems, mm-hmm. I'm probably going to take Camilleri because he's more of a lock to get more points.
Now, Phil Kessel fits in that category. He gets 30 goals every year. This year, Vakota's got him at 35. I know what McKean's got him at. Vakota's got him at 35. We were talking to Dennis Bayak at practice last week.
McKean's got him at 32 goals.
There you go. And talking to Dennis Bayak at practice last week, obviously calling Leafs games for many years, he said, you know, Kessel's going to get his 30. He always gets his 30.
Yes.
And that's to your point.
Yes.
If you know the guys, it's going to get 30.
Even though you know, Kessel's been criticized because of the trade and what the Leafs gave up, Kessel is definitely a very good, reliable offensive player, and he's not going to get 90 points.
That's right.
But I would go on the record to say if he plays a full season, he's for sure going to get 60 or 65 points. You have to be smart about it. In a hockey pool, I see this year after year after year. And guys, and another thing, Drew, is players that had good playoffs last year are going to go higher than they should have. Brad Marchand, Teddy Purcell, guys like that for Boston and Tampa, guys that mm-hmm. had really good playoffs who only had 30 points during the regular season.
Good point.
And fine, go for it, but there's a huge risk that a guy that had a really good playoff who usually only puts up 30 or 40 points, even if he's on a better line this year and gets more ice time, it's quite likely he's not going to get you 60 points. So you have to be cautious. You can go with the risk or reward. It's like poker, but usually the guy that, you know, has the best hand is usually going to win, right?
I can't beat a better analogy. Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to talk fantasy defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show's Fantasy Preview Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 1 hour down, 3 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Drew, what's the longest, sorry for cutting you off, what's the longest we've ever been on air? 5 hours?
Trade deadline show, I think?
Yeah.
5 hours. That was a five-hour show.
It's five and a half?
No, five.
Apparently Remus is here. Anybody want to let him in?
I'll go let him in.
Okay, that's nice of you.
I'm good.
Yeah, that's good. 5 hours. That was a 2 o'clock till 7 o'clock show.
Hold on, are we allowed to let Remus in?
I don't think so.
Oh, he's in. He's in?
Oh, there he is. Yeah. Did Remus bring Ezzy a booster juice? No, I see a Slurpee, but no booster juice.
That's not Slurpee. You had time to stop for a Slurpee?
Well,
yeah, it's kind of like stopping for Juju Fruits when you find out your friends in the hospital.
That is similar.
Yeah.
People are here. Like the hospital's like the...
We're waiting for Remus. He has time to get a Slurpee.
People in the hockey pools might have a hockey pool at 2 o'clock.
It's true. They're desperate to find out who they should draft defenseman-wise.
Remus, right. Get in here and justify that Slurpee.
Nah, it's okay. Here's the defenseman.
Drew, you okay?
I'm okay. Choking a little bit on the booster juice there. Who do you draft? Who's your number one defenseman taking over? Is it Mike Green?
No.
Who would Drew? Is this 2007?
Well, I mean, who's your number one defenseman jumping out at you right now?
I'll tell you who Hockey Prospectus has projected number one.
I want Richards. I want to hear who
Richards
has. Let's
go off them first and we can talk about it. Okay. Who does McKean's have as you pull that up? Hockey Prospectus has got Big Buff.
Big Buff is the number one defenseman to take?
Sure does.
He had 53 points in 81 games last year.
And this is a cautious system, as you realize already.
Right, because they're
62 points.
62 points. They really see a big step forward. I'd be surprised if I see that. That strikes me as a lot.
That's a lot of points.
Last year, Lubomir Vyshnovsky had the most points, 68 points in 81 games.
It's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. Lubomir Vyshnovsky, for the record, is a guy that I've liked on the back end in fantasy drafts for years. Yep. I had him, I believe, in that four-year pool that we did that almost ruined all our lives.
Yeah. You're the only friend I kept through that. It's unfortunate.
That you and I, yeah, I know. It's true. I tried to get rid of you multiple times throughout that, and yet you're somehow still here. It's really depressing.
Yeah, Lumen Marjanovski, again, is a guy who, you look at that power play, guys. Getzlaff, Perry, Ryan, Solani, Marjanovski. I mean, you know, their second unit ain't great, but their first unit's pretty strong. And he is a terrific skater. He's got a good quick shot, good slap shot. He is good, a good pass. You know, offensively speaking, he's A level.
Richie, so, I'm having a little trouble finding McKean's top defenseman, but you have to keep in mind too when Drew will have a look through the guide. But last year, Lubomir Vyshnovsky led all defensemen, like Drew mentioned, with 68 points. Last year, you had Keith Yandel, who had 59 points.
That's my next one. I mean, where does Keith Yandel slot in? They've lost. I mean, they might not have Kyle Turris playing. You say, oh, it's just Kyle Turris. Sure. But this year, they expected something from Kyle Turris. They've lost Eddie Jovanovski. Maybe that helps him and gets him even more time. But I think the truth is, Phoenix, maybe Yandel situation may even help him this year, because Phoenix doesn't have Brizgalov anymore. Probably going to be down. Probably going to be putting more shots on net, getting more chances. It's very possible he could replicate that season.
McKean's has Chris Letang as being the top, as their top projected defenseman with 54 points. Vyshnovsky second with 53.
That's kind of low. But
that is kind of low.
I think Letang will be up there. I'm not sure if he'll be number one. Last year you had Lidstrom, I think, was number two.
Yeah.
And then Yandel was three. But I think this is the problem. I think it's actually harder to project defensemen than forwards. I think I have a good grasp on it. But for instance, Lidstrom's numbers were down 2 years ago, and then last year he got up to where he usually was. For years, Lidstrom was in between 60 and 70 points. But the problem, the thing is, I don't necessarily disagree with you on Yandel. I think that I would think that his point totals are going to be lower, because not by a lot. I think he'll still be around 50. I don't know if he'll be high 50s again. But the way I look at it goes back to what kind of similar to the point I was making before. When you look at defensemen and guys that had breakout years, you could put Enstrom in this category too.
You could.
But I would. I think Enstrom is a much better defenseman than Yandel overall and offensively. But that's just my opinion.
No, offensively, but overall, I would agree with that. I think, as he's somebody else we haven't talked about, arguably the best defenseman in hockey, Shea Weber.
Right. And his numbers were down last year, even though
Weber had 48 points in 82 games last year.
He's better, 60 or something.
He's better than that. I had him last year. It wasn't great. He's better than that. He plays with Ryan Suter, an underrated offensive defenseman, a tremendous passer. Remember, Weber's going in another contract year now. He just got a big. He's going to go in again.
Mm-hmm.
Suter's going into a contract year, too. Two contract years for two of the best defensemen in the league who play together on a team that relies on its back end to produce offense. You can't go wrong there, as far as I'm concerned.
It's funny, Rich, though. Usually, you've only got, in a typical year, you've got, 10 or 15 defensemen that are going to have above 45 points or 50 points, roughly around there. Let's say 15 or 20 that are going to have above 45 or 50 points, right?
Let's ask.
You might as well, to not overcomplicate things. And once again, for people listening out there, we're talking about drafting guys for just points. If goals and assists are one.
One goal, one assist. That's
when
all.
You're looking at guys and you're trying to project, you know, how many points they're going to get, who you should take in which round. And defensemen usually don't get taken until the second, third, fourth round of pools, if that.
There's a couple names I want to ask you guys about that jump out at me here based on last year's performance.
Yeah. Okay.
One, going to a new team, that's James Wisniewski. Now, he's about to be suspended for some amount of games.
You got to watch that.
Yeah, see my tweet, Drew?
Yeah, I saw your tweet. Just talking about that they should, whoever gave him that contract should be investigated for a hit to the head. Yeah, it was a good tweet. But James Wisniewski, going to a new team.
Yeah.
You know, he had 51 points in 75 games for Montreal last year.
Now, remember, a lot of those was front heavy in New York.
Yeah. He was on the island.
He was on the island for the most part.
Beginning
That's right.
Of the season.
Yeah.
So, what do I think about him?
Yeah.
He's going to get all the opportunity in the world there. I think he's going to have a pretty good season. He's offensively, he's very strong. Defensively, he's very questionable.
Yeah.
But I don't have any issue with taking him. Now, he's a guy who's had a suspension history.
Yeah.
So he might get a few games here, maybe a few games later in the season. He hope for no injury. So account for the fact that you might be looking at a 70-game season here.
Yeah. I think he had 51 points last year. He racked up a lot of points on the island, and he was okay on Montreal. Terrible defensively, but we're not talking about defense here. We're talking about how many points he's going to get. So, if we're talking about what you know, what does he rank as far as the defense goes? He's probably in between 10 and 15. He'll probably get around 50 points.
His plus minus in those pools will kill you, probably.
But the thing is, people always go overboard and think that a guy like James Wisniewski, because he's playing with Rick Nash, is going to get 70 points, and it's not going to happen.
You're right. You're right. And the plus minus might hurt him. His power play points will be helpful, for sure. But plus minus will hurt him, and something like that needs to be taken into account.
Another guy I want to ask you about, currently unsigned, that's Drew Doughty.
I mean, you could argue that this guy, I think I took him in the pool last year with Call again, very high. I think it was an auto draft. I missed the first round or two. But he is a tremendous, you know, if you're talking right now, based on the fact, if you're talking rotisserie. I'm talking either or, because he can get points, plus minus. He can get power play points. He can do all that. In a regular points pool, he can do that easily, too. To me, if he's signed and ready to go, he's a top three defenseman in a fantasy pool. And I would not say you're crazy if you took him number one.
And you're going to have to watch that every single day leading up to the season starting, because he's not signed.
People are doing their drafts in the next week or so.
He's going to sign, Drew. I would put it to you this way. If the first tier is gone, I'd take him. But if anybody else in that first tier, a Bufflin, a Yandel, guys like that, I would take them first because of the security.
Simply because of the risk involved.
Yep. That's right.
And let's say he signs next week and you're doing your draft on October 5th or something before the season starts. Doughty's the number one defenseman. We haven't talked about him yet, but that's because we've almost waited 4 months now for him to sign. But
let's ask one more question before we head to break, and then on the other side we have Jeff Angus coming up from Dauber Hockey.
Tell us his sleeper defenseman.
He's going to talk about his sleeper defenseman. So these are the names we're going to talk. We're talking about the names that are really at the forefront.
I hope
right
we
now.
Talk about Zach Bogosian.
Well, I wasn't going to right now. I was going to talk about a guy named Nicklas Lidström.
Yeah, you know, Drew, I've always...
That guy can't be a sleeper.
I've avoided him.
We're talking about sleepers right next segment, Ezra. Next segment.
I'm falling asleep over here, Drew.
I've avoided him for a couple of years, the last 2 years.
Because you figure he's taking the
step back? It's actually not true. 3 years ago, I avoided him. Then last year, I thought he had dropped too far. I took him. He was great. And then last year, I avoided him because I thought, you know, 40 years old, step back, still performed. He's like Mariano Rivera that way, isn't he?
Baseball? He's one of the greatest of all time who right now is putting – he's defying odds. Look at last year, 62 points. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
82
but
games, 16 goals, look, 46 assists.
He dropped his ice time a lot.
His numbers the year before that I think were in between 40 and 50, a little bit lower. And if you look at it now, I would say it's going to be somewhere in between 40 and 55. I think it'll go down. But you're right about the Mariano Rivera analogy, because now Brian Rafalski's gone.
That's a huge one, by the way. Can we talk about that? I mean, Ian White is a nice signing by them. I like it. Yep.
Brian Rafalski. Steinbeck, but yeah. Rafalski's one of the better ones of all time.
That's a huge one.
Lidström took a 13-point jump from 2 years ago to last year. In 2010, he had 49 points.
Yeah, so I was
last year close. He had 62 points.
I would agree with Ezzy. I think you're looking at the 45-point range.
Bit of a dip, yeah.
So you're this is the year that you're counting on a bit of a dip?
But 45 points for defenseman.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Well, again, Lidström is like, you know, Lidström and Solani are like this too. Even though for the love of hockey and the sport, we want those guys to always play. But if this isn't the last year for Lidström or Solani, it's going to be next year. It's just the way it is. They're both 41, 42 years old. They can't play forever, even though we'd like them to.
The way they play, they seem like they can play forever. Well, but your point is well taken anyways.
We'll see.
I mean, it's just, so you're saying not top three as your defenseman despite him scoring in
still
that level.
Still top 10, though. Top 10, top 15. Somewhere in there, I'd say. He's the 10th or 15th defenseman that should be taken.
Let's leave it there when we come back on the other side. From Dauber Hockey, Jeff Angus is going to join us to talk sleeper defenseman. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. Michael Remus has made his way down here after being at the MTS Iceplex for Jets practice earlier today. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. We're now joined by Jeff Angus from Dauber Hockey.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Jeff, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you this afternoon?
Good, how are you guys doing?
Doing very well, having some great fantasy talk, and that's why we got you on, because you're the fantasy expert.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Okay, let's talk defensemen. You know, there's lots of different rules and regulations and pools. Some of them require you to draft defensemen, and, you know, after you get past that top tier of defensemen, you sometimes sort of take a look at and you sort of grimacing at the kind of selections available to you. You know, what one guy is out there that jumps out at you as a guy you can get for great value late in a draft?
I'd say there's a lot of good, right now, there's a lot of good young defensemen. I think this is probably the last 10 or 15 years, the most quality young defensemen that have come through at one time. I think names that are familiar to people would be guys like Erik Karlsson in Ottawa and Alex Pietrangelo in St. Louis. I think another guy the Blues picked up last year in their Johnson trade, Kevin Shattenkirk, sort of had an under-the-radar rookie year. 40-plus points as a defenseman is pretty impressive, especially considering he was traded. I think he's a guy that the Blues are a team, a lot of people, myself included, are expecting big things from, not only in terms of wins and losses, but offensively. And I think he's a guy that's going to potentially be up around the 50 to 55-point mark.
Jeff, I got to ask you about Zach Bogosian, because he signed a little bit late here in Winnipeg. He had an off year last year, was minus 27, even though we don't think that you should really look too much at minus plus-minus as a statistic that's indicative of a guy's performance. But how many points do you think Bogosian's going to pick up? Because a lot of people talk about his potential, but we don't really necessarily know that he's necessarily going to break out and get 70 points this year.
Yeah, the Jets, they got a lot of, I wouldn't say purely offensive defensemen, but they got a lot of defensemen who can move the puck, so it's not like he's has zero competition for power play minutes. I think he's a guy that hasn't really, I haven't seen Atlanta play a lot over the past couple of years, but he hasn't really looked 100% comfortable at the NHL level. He obviously has great natural tools. He's really strong, big, great skater, huge shot, but he hasn't really seemed to put it all in terms of combining it with hockey sense and anticipation, that sort of thing. I wouldn't really have a ton of expectations for him this year. I think it's still going to be mostly Anstrom and Bufflin in terms of power play time for defensemen. I think a 30 to 35 points would be a solid season to get him back on track. And I think more so if I owned him in a pool, I'd be looking just for some steady play. And usually when defensemen can figure out the defensive side, then the offensive stuff comes quickly after.
Jeff, a defenseman you're high on, and actually one that I got to see firsthand at the Memorial Cup last year on a team with Brandon Gormley, is David Savard, Columbus draft pick, and pretty very, very good puck mover as far as I'm concerned. Can you talk about him and his chances of making the team and his possibility of being a kind of dark horse defensive selection?
Yeah, Savard's the guy I've had on my radar for a while. I think his development over the past couple of years has been pretty impressive from when he was drafted. He's got great numbers. It is the Quebec League, so there are a lot of defensemen who put up good numbers, but you can't really discount what he's done. And he's definitely leapfrogged some more notable guys in that system, one being John Moore, for as the best young defenseman. And I think with Columbus looking for maybe changing up their system a bit, a little more offense, they brought Wisniewski in. They don't have a whole lot after him. They had Grant Clinton last year. He's still not completely proven. I think Savard is a guy that Blues should be looking at more for maybe 2 to 3 years down the road, but I think he's a guy that could step in and put up 30 points this year, given second power play duties.
Jeff, one guy that was buried in purgatory last year in the Oilers system is Sheldon Surrey. He gets a fresh start this season. Does he still have the ability to perform and put up some points, or is this a guy you should be avoiding at all costs?
No, I've taken a flyer on him late in a few drafts. I think Dallas is a great situation for him. There won't be a ton of pressure from media, fans, that sort of thing. I think the fact that he signed a low contract helps as well. A lot of times people base expectation off of salary. So when they see he's making under two, they won't be on him if he has a stretch of poor play. But after Goligoski, they don't really have any power play defensemen. They've played Robidoux there the last few years, but that's not really his role. He's more of a two-way guy. And I think Surrey is definitely someone that has that tiny upside for a big season, but I think even 10 goals, 25 to 30 points, he's a great power play specialist, and I think that's how Dallas is probably going to use him.
Jeff, right before you came on, we were talking about the Detroit Red Wings.
The Red Wings.
Yeah. And, Nicholas Lidstrom and Ian White. As far as Ian White goes, you know, he's kind of been hot and cold in the NHL with the Carolina Hurricanes, Toronto Maple Leafs, Calgary Flames. What can you tell us about what to expect from Ian White this year?
I think he made a great decision signing with Detroit personally. He's not the same level of Brian Rafalski, but you can see why both sides made the move. He's going to slide right in and take up, I'd say, a significant portion of Rafalski's power play minutes. Detroit, like a lot of teams, likes to have a right-handed shot on the point for that one-timer from both sides. So I think White's going to be a guy that sees some time on the top unit. And they have some good young defensemen there, Kendall and Brendan Smith, but I don't think either of them are ready for frontline duty yet. So I think White, it's sort of hard to say a player's going to have a career year breakout given line mates and stuff like that, but I think White's walking into a great situation playing with Lidstrom and Zetterberg and Datsyuk, who are all healthy after a longer summer than they're used to.
Jeff, Brian Campbell's a guy who, you know, was signed to the huge contract by Mr. Dale Tallon in Chicago. It was an albatross. He got fired, moved to Florida, brought him into Florida this year. Florida, you know, has obviously made a ton of additions this summer, but Campbell's going to get, and already has gotten, you know, a boatload of power play time in the preseason and moving into the regular season. I don't think people question his skill. Do you think you can maybe get him for a little bit later than maybe you could two seasons ago with about the same production?
I'd say so. I think you can get him later than comparable defensemen. There's a couple of reasons. One is he's on Florida now, so I think a lot of people are see a move from Chicago to Florida as a significant downgrade. In terms of quality of linemates, it may reflect that, but he's going to get a lot more ice time. And secondly, a lot of people, like I mentioned earlier with Surrey, unless you're in a salary cap league, people shouldn't even worry about what a player makes. And a lot of times people look at Campbell as a $7.5 million defenseman, and they see his inconsistent play, and then they overlook him. But as a fantasy hockey poolie, that should be irrelevant. So I think he's a guy. I have him in the high 40s, and I think he's got an upside for more if Florida can get some production out of a couple of the guys they brought in, like Upshaw or Fleischman.
Jeff, you know, what other names are, you know, flying under the radar? Most hockey fans wouldn't have them come right to the forefront as guys that they should really be targeting in their fantasy draft.
Well, it depends where in the draft. In the top couple rounds, in general, I usually go with best player available. If it's a draft with many GMs and I'm picking early, I may go for a goalie above a skater, just because I may not get one on the way back. So I'd always recommend trying to get a top-level goalie. I'd say there's four or five of them this year. I'd have Miller, Lundqvist, Rene, Breezkalov, and probably Luongo in that top mix. And some other guys to look for in terms of they're well-known, but they may do better than people expect. I think Claude Giroux's a great candidate. He's not a superstar in terms of Ovechkin, Crosby, but I think he's a guy that could challenge for the Art Ross this year. And I think a lot of people maybe don't have as high expectations. So if you could get him in two or three, I think he's a guy I would look at drafting. And another is a guy I saw a lot of in junior, Jamie Benn on Dallas. Apparently he's had a great camp.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's ready to take over as Dallas's best forward.
Jeff, I guess we have, if this isn't the last one, it's one of the last questions we have for you. When getting back to defensemen here, you know, we have some listeners that follow us from Montreal. P.K. Subban had 38 points last year. You know, we're all pretty high on him, and I think people look at his natural skill, and it's pretty ridiculous. Do you see him moving into the 50-point range this year for defensemen?
Yeah, easily. I'm a huge Subban fan. I think he's got a ton of upside.
And, you know, you talked about Giroux and you talked about Ben, both guys with upside and the possibility of becoming the number one centers of that team. Is that one thing you're looking for, Jeff, when you're trying to draft players and you see a guy like Ben, for example, with Ribeiro in front of him, a guy who Dallas probably like to get rid of if they could? Do you sometimes look at the players playing in front of the guys and see for an opportunity to hop over and get increased ice time as the season goes along?
Yeah, for sure. I think it does go both ways. You get times you get guys when players are, say Ben was playing behind Brad Richards and he was seeing easier minutes. Sometimes you get that where the player steps into a role he's not ready for and his production suffers. But in general, I'm looking for guys who are going to step into roles with more minutes and more responsibility that are ready for it. And I think the two guys I listed are great examples. Another one would be Patrick Berglund in St. Louis. He's sort of been off and on throughout his NHL career, shown why people are so high on him, and then he's gone missing for 10 or 15 games. And I think he's a guy that Blues have a lot of good forwards, but they don't really have any great forwards, and I think he's a guy that could take that step. Maybe not this season, but next season.
Final question, Jeff, and everybody's wondering. We talked about it in the first segment. We asked Timo Seppä about it in the first hour. Where do you take Sidney Crosby?
Ah, interesting question. Depending on pool format, for example, I own Crosby in one of my keeper leagues, and we count faceoff wins, so he's quite valuable. Okay. In terms of drafting for a one-year league, so just this year only, I've seen him go anywhere from 4th to 20th in my draft. I would probably take him anywhere after 6 or 7. I think it's a big risk taking a first rounder that may not even play, but I think the upside has to outweigh the downside. He comes in, even if he misses 10 or 15 games, he's most likely still going to be up there with the scoring leaders. And you also have to look at points per game in fantasy pools. So say you get a guy plays 60, 70 games. You have to also factor in the points that his replacement player is going to get. So I think I would probably take him late first round.
Jeff, before we let you go, tell our listeners where they can find you aside from the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I write the ramblings over at Dobber Hockey, dobberhockey.com, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We have our sixth annual pool guide out, and that's been updated every couple days, and we update it right until puck drop on game one. And, yeah, we have great forums, we have some new writers, some good prospect stuff coming up. So, yeah, you can check most of my stuff out there. I do some writing for a few other sites as well.
Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, Angus_J, and I post my primarily fantasy hockey-related thoughts over there.
That's terrific. Jeff Angus from Dobber Hockey, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
I'm going to use some of those tips.
Jeff sent me the annual for Dobber this year. They do a great job. And
how many pool guides do you have right now?
I got a lot of pool guides. And they do a great job. The thing about the magazines is that they just get better and better every year. More descriptive. And
especially the new age with the magazines is, you know, it used to be you'd buy them, the magazine would go to the printers June.
That's right.
And it would be a little bit out to date. Nowadays,
I got the PDF of it.
Nowadays you just get the PDF of it. And like you said, it updates every day right up until puck drop. Let's head to break. On the other side, we're going to talk about the big question mark, the always unknown. They are the rookies in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Fantasy Preview Spectacular live on Sports Radio 1290.